The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back. As liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening. Good evening and welcome to the National Intel Report. Tuned in live this Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. And I am your guest host, Chris Hinckley, sitting in for John Stadmiller, regular host of Road Warrior Radio here on Republic Broadcasting Network. What do you want to talk about today? What do you want to talk about? Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. I'll start. There are so many stories going on these days, and you know, the folks who have done interviews with Charlotte Iserby in recent years, Richard Grove over at Tragedy and Hope, Tom Lacovara here on Republic Broadcasting, folks that have done interviews with Charlotte Iserby, are we listening closely to what she's been saying? The Skinner operant conditioning model. And, you know, the Skinner box, it fits together with, you know, the Norbert Wiener cybernetic totalist discussion. I've mentioned the Minds of Men documentary by Aaron and Melissa Dykes over at TrueStream Media in recent days and weeks, ever since they published it. I just finished watching the entirety of it at almost 4 hour runtime. I just finally finished watching it the other day, and it's incredible, you know. So have we been listening to what Charlotte Iserby is saying? So my point here is we have all of these stories going on, and you have to wonder, in an operant conditioning model, in a cybernetic feedback loop model, how much of the narrative that we hear is designed to condition folks. Let me give you an example. I was asked earlier today if I'm familiar with, if I've heard of Tyler Tuit. I said, I don't think so. And the response I got was they're trying to throw him in jail for living off his land completely. And so my response to that was, yeah, those are usually examples, quote unquote, you know, air quotes, whether real or contrived, for the public to digest, and parenthetically I add, and fear. My first question in all of these stories is typically, who knows this person or persons personally? And you know, that's usually a clue, if you know what I mean. And the response I got was, I do know what you mean. I never thought of it like that. That's disgusting. And my response was, it's totally disgusting. I agree. These kinds of psyops get run all the time. There's an interesting little short Adam Curtis created a few years ago. It's very telling. Remember Adam Curtis, Century of the Self. Anyway, you know, speaking of all of this nonsense, Adam Curtis created that short back in 2014 for BBC's 2014 Wipe. You're in review. And so these kinds of psyops get run all the time. watch Adam Curtis's little short. It's very telling and worth watching and keeping front of mind, I would add, when it comes to these kinds of psychological operations. So it's arguably so important, in fact, that Tim Haines posted it twice over at Real Clear Politics. Once in 2014, the title, Adam Curtis on the Contradictory Vaudeville of Postmodern Politics. And that was a great general post. The next one, I think, was a little misleading because focused on Russia. And the title of the second post was Adam Curtis, How Propaganda Turned Russian Politics into Theater. And, you know, if you're paying attention, you're watching, you see that this is happening just as much in America as it is allegedly in Russia. What Vladislav Surkov has been able to accomplish to help Vladimir Putin maintain power for the last 2 decades now is very similar to the theater that we've seen in America. And so I mentioned that. And then a few Sun Tzu quotes. All warfare is based on deception. The supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first and then seek to win. Hence, to fight and conquer in all your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence consists in breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. And so this sort of concept is, to me, the overarching concept, especially with the, again, you know, the Skinner box, the cybernetic feedback loop. It's all the same discussion. You know it. I know it. With those things in mind, we have to be mindful of this conditioning, you know. And then, of course, you add into it other aspects of the discussion, like the Rand Corporation's work on game theory and the gamification of everything these days. Game theory and the iterative prisoner's dilemma. And all of this is really designed to condition people to behave in a very predictable sort of way for predictable outcomes. And so, you know, you can't dismiss that. But I don't see anyone talking about that, which is very interesting. We know that this is happening. We know that this has been the basis of a predominant body of scientific and social research for almost 100 years, if not 100 or more years now, certainly since the 1930s. You know, all the Ivy League experiments that led to all of these hypotheses, that led to all of this behavioral modification nonsense. And, you know, we have stories that validate this. For example, Bill Davidoff's article in The Atlantic back on June 10, 2013, for instance, Skinner marketing. They call it Skinner marketing now. Can you believe it? I can't. I mean, I can, but I can't. It's horrifying. So the operant conditioning chamber, the operant conditioning model, Skinnerian marketing is the term, Skinner or Skinnerian marketing. So the Atlantic article, Skinner marketing, we're the rats and Facebook likes are the reward. Our internet handlers are using operant conditioning to modify our behavior. And so from the opening of the article, one of the most popular announcements at Google's recent developers conference was the new version of Google Maps, which has a lot of spiffy new bells and whistles, to be sure. But there's an ominous side note here. Remember, this is 2013. The new Google Maps for mobile devices allow marketers to offer products and deals based on consumers' physical location. We're entering the age of Skinnerian marketing. Future applications making use of big data, location maps, tracking of a browser's interests and data streams coming from mobile and wearable devices. And of course, we know that Scott Klosowski tells us we're going to move from mobile to wearables to implantables. But never mind that now, promised to usher in the era of unprecedented power in the hands of marketers who are no longer merely appealing to our innate desires, but programming our behaviors. You go back a little bit further, and there was Howard Rheingold's Smart Mobs. I've mentioned the story several times from his book, Smart Mobs, the Next Social Revolution, Mobile Communication, Pervasive Computing, Wireless Networks, Collective Action. The Next Smart Mobs, the Next Social Revolution. So there was the story in Howard Rheingold's book, Smart Mobs. It was published in the late 90s, I want to say, about the MIT grad student who handed out cell phones. This was back in the days of the gray Motorola flip phone with the giant numbers on it. You know that one, the giant numbers, the giant display that you felt like you needed suntan lotion to put it next to your head. I mean, that hasn't changed, but and the giant buttons on the phone. So back in those days, he handed out a number of phones. I think it was around 100 to his peers at MIT, and on the condition that everything they were free, but the condition was that the everything on the phone would be tracked, including geolocation data. And within a period of weeks, he knew where these MIT grad students would be with greater accuracy than they could tell themselves, weeks and even months in advance. And then, of course, Google bought that technology, so that's fantastic. But there's that, you know, not too long ago, we got the story that was republished over at the Stanford Public Policy Program, the headline there from, it was republished from Motherboard, the data that turned the world upside down, talking about how Michael Kaczynski's research, just using likes, could tell folks more than their coworkers, their family, their spouse, and even themselves could tell. Even they themselves can tell about themselves, just from likes. And why? Not because of the like itself, but because of the association, the relational database. Because you have to remember, Facebook is based on the open graph model. It's a graph database model. And so all of those relations allow a person to gather an overwhelming amount of data. In Richard Grove's 2015 interview of Bill Binney, Bill Binney was saying that there are a number of things that data scientists weren't able to do yet. In other words, he hadn't left the Rosetta Stone at NSA for them to be able to do certain things yet. And I think that they're fast catching up. The graph database model, really understanding the power of it, having tools like Neo4j. You go to Neo4j, you look at the story of the Panama Papers, for example, which was unfortunate that technology didn't have a chance to make its way out further into the justice world, because bad guys are controlling the narrative. But you have all of these tools, and of course you add on top of that the recent alleged leak of the selfish ledger. Remember back in May, the selfish ledger nonsense, Google's selfish ledger? We have all of this information, and yet somehow we are not having a discussion about the would-be programming of us all. And with the advent of and the rise of artificial intelligence, so-called and machine learning, now you have the ubiquity of this technology to be able to apply this control and manipulation to a granular and almost individual level. So I think this is a sobering thought that we need to be discussing. Anyway, I want to give you, at the opening of this segment, Adam Curtis, How Propaganda Turned Russian Politics into Theater. Here it is. Go ahead.
Yes, so much please. Of the news this year has been hopeless, depressing, and above all, confusing. To which the only response is, oh dear. But what this film is going to suggest is that that defeatist response has become a central part of a new system of political control. And to understand how this is happening, you have to look to Russia and to a man called Vladislav Surkov, who is a hero of our time. Surkov is one of President Putin's advisors and has helped him maintain his power for 15 years. But he has done it in a very new way.
Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin.
He came originally from the avant-garde art world. And those who have studied his career say that what Surkov has done is import ideas from conceptual art into the very heart of politics. His aim is to undermine people's perception of the world, so they never know what is really happening. Surkov turned Russian politics into a bewildering, constantly changing piece of theatre. He sponsored all kinds of groups, from neo-Nazi skinheads to liberal human rights groups. He even backed parties that were opposed to President Putin.
Any of that ringing a bell?
The key thing was that Surkov then let it be known that this was what he was doing, which meant that no one was sure what was real or fake. As one journalist put it, it's a strategy of power that keeps any opposition constantly confused. A ceaseless shape-shifting that is unstoppable because it's indefinable. Which is exactly what Surkov is alleged to have done in the Ukraine this year. In typical fashion, as the war began, Surkov published a short story about something he called non-linear war. A war where you never know what the enemy are really up to, or even who they are. The underlying aim, Surkov says, is not to win the war, but to use the conflict to create a constant state of destabilized perception in order to manage and control. But maybe we have something similar emerging here in Britain. Everything we're told by journalists and politicians is confusing and contradictory. Of course, there is no Mr. Surkov in charge, but it's an odd, non-linear world that plays into the hands of those in power. British troops have come home from Afghanistan, but nobody seems to know whether it was a victory or whether it was a defeat. Aging disc jockeys are prosecuted for crimes they committed decades ago, while practically no one in the City of London is prosecuted for the endless financial crimes that are being revealed there. In Syria, we are told that President Assad is the evil enemy, but then his enemies turn out to be even more evil than him. So we bomb them, and by doing that, we help keep Assad in power. But the real epicenter of this non-linear world is the economy. And the closest we have to our own shape-shifting, postmodern politician is George Osborne. He tells us proudly that the economy is growing, but at the same time, wages are going down. He says he is cutting the deficit, but then it's revealed that the deficit is going up. But the dark heart of this shape-shifting world is quantitative easing. The government is insisting on taking billions of pounds out of the economy through its austerity program. Yet at the very same time, it is pumping billions of pounds into the economy through quantitative easing, the equivalent of £24,000 for every family in Britain. But it gets even more confusing, because the Bank of England have admitted that those billions of pounds have not gone where they are supposed to. A vast amount of the money has actually found its way into the hands of the wealthiest 5% in Britain. It has been described as the biggest transfer of wealth to the rich in recent documented history. It could be a huge scandal, comparable to the greedy oligarchs in Russia. A ruthless elite siphoning off billions of public money. But nobody seems to know. It sums up the strange mood of our time, where nothing really makes any coherent sense. We live with a constant vaudeville of contradictory stories that makes it impossible for any real opposition to emerge, because they can't counter it with a coherent narrative of their own. And it means that we as individuals become ever more powerless, unable to challenge anything, because we live in a state of confusion and uncertainty, to which the response is, oh dear. But that's what they want you to say.
Exactly. Any of that ringing a bell? Because it sure sounds a lot like what we are experiencing here in America. And all the more so in the Trump era. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. I don't think this can be overlooked. I think depending on what quarter you find yourself in, you will hear reverberations of information that support whatever conclusion you want to come to or whatever conviction you want to hold, if that makes sense. And I mentioned yesterday on yesterday's Road Warrior Radio broadcast that you know, from E.H. Carr's What Is History? Carr was a contemporary of R.L. J. Toynbee, by the way. So there's an article over at Spartacus Educational. Just to skip down. In 1950, Carr embarked on a 14-volume History of the Soviet Union. In 1953, Carr became tutor at Balliol College. 2 years later, he moved to Trinity College. His most popular work, What Is History?, appeared in 1961. It included a controversial statement. The facts are really not at all like fish on the fishmonger's slab. They are like fish swimming about in a vast and sometimes inaccessible ocean. And what the historian catches will depend partly on chance, but mainly on what part of the ocean he chooses to fish in and what tackle he chooses to use. These two factors being, of course, determined by the kind of fish he wants to catch. By and large, the historian will get the kind of facts he wants. History means interpretation. And so, we have seen the erosion of credibility in the mainstream media. We've seen the erosion of, the Oxford English Dictionary Word of the Year in 2016 was what? Post-truth? Not after-truth, but meaning I'm less concerned with the truth and facts than I am with a persuasive argument. Give me a persuasive argument. Which sounds exactly like the kind of thing that these bad guys have observed, you know, the cybernetic totalists. For example, Bertrand Russell's, the excerpt from Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society, where the way he put it, I think the subject which will be of most importance politically is mass psychology. Mass psychology is, scientifically speaking, and remember, Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society, which could have been titled The Impact of Technocracy on Society, was published back in 1952. But he said mass psychology is, scientifically speaking, not a very advanced study, and so far its professors have not been in universities. They have been, listen to this, advertisers, politicians, and above all, dictators. Uh-oh. Mass psychology. Do we have mass psychology in America today? This study is immensely useful to practical men, et cetera, et cetera. Its importance has been enormously increased by the growth of modern methods of propaganda. Echoes of Bernays. So what modern methods of propaganda exactly? Well, he continues, of these, the most influential is what is called education, quote unquote. That's telling. Again, 1952. And I hear echoes of the Rees Committee there, by the way. Religion plays a part, though a diminishing one. The press, the cinema, and the radio play an increasing part. The press, the cinema, and the radio play an increasing part. What is essential in mass psychology is the art of persuasion. Post-truth, anyone? If you compare a speech of Hitler's with a speech of, say, Edmund Burke, you will see what strides have been made in the art since the 18th century. What went wrong formally was that people had read books, that man is a rational animal. Again, you can hear echoes of Skinner and Wiener and the cybernetic totalists, the Skinner box, operant conditioning. Man is a rational animal, and framed their arguments on this hypothesis because, you know, one of the claims that B.F. Skinner made was that, you know, like in his Walden 2, for example, the notion was that you know, Walden believed in the virtue of self-reliance at an individual level, and Skinner adulterated that and said, you know, the virtue of self-reliance at the community level, whatever that means, is the logical fallacy that we're fed today in America. And then, more importantly in this context, Skinner's underlying premise that free will of the individual is weak compared to how environmental conditions shape behavior. But continuing, Bertrand Russell wrote, what went wrong formally was that people had read in books that man is a rational animal and framed their arguments on this hypothesis. We now know that limelight and a brass band do more to persuade than can be done by the most elegant train of syllogisms. And then skipping forward in that passage in Chapter 2, General Effects on Scientific Technique, and when you think technique, it's not what you think technique. It's what, for example, Jacques Ellul wrote about when these guys were talking about technique. Maybe I'll touch on that in a little bit. Anyway, continuing, skipping ahead, in The Impact of Science on Society, Bertrand Russell wrote, "The populace will not be allowed to know how its convictions were generated. When the technique has been perfected, every government that has been in charge of education for a generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the need of armies or policemen." And I can't help but be reminded of last Saturday's conference, Ship That Won't Sink, and John Stadmiller's remarks at said conference that, you know, I was talking to him on the phone recently, and he reiterated remarks that he made at the conference, Ship That Won't Sink conference, last Saturday. And basically he was saying, you know, we have this list here at the network of, you know, what Charlotte Iserby refers to on her website, Deliberate Dumbing Down, as the Patriot Honor Roll, you might say. That's what the name of it is there on deliberatedumbingdown.com. But, you know, John said there is this list of folks. I think he said it was like 20 pages long or something. I don't know what that means, like how big the font is or the typeset or whatever, but sounds like a lot of people. And he said half of them are deceased now. And, you know, it's kind of unsettling to admit that. It, I think, is kind of the way he put it. But the bigger problem is, like he said at Saturday's talk, is that these folks are not being replaced. They're not being replaced. You know, I'm looking for the remarks. I wonder if the description of that was changed, because it was in the description over at mixandstream.com. You know, ship won't sink, those words hyphenated.html. But, The folks that the giants on whose shoulders we have come here, in spite of, you know, against all odds, basically, in spite of overwhelming efforts in opposition and to the contrary of knowing the truth and what's really going on, those folks are not being replaced. Many of them I would consider irreplaceable.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Welcome back. So, John's speech, I guess, talk at the conference, The Hours Late is what it's titled. And, you know, from the description, John Stadmiller says, the main difficulty we have is distribution of truth. Again, I'm reminded of the clip that we played and some of the things that I said to open today's National Intel Report. The freedom of speech is useless without a platform to be heard from. And, you know, it's the old adage, freedom of speech is guaranteed if you own one. Or freedom of the press, is guaranteed if you own one. So truth is being deplatformed is point from the description. How are we going to talk to the people if this is the case? The movies Revelation and Aaron Russo's America Freedom to Fascism both had distribution problems and lost a lot of money as a result. Those who are thought to be the constitutional giants, such as Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, are woefully misleading. Video about how debt currency and Federal Reserve works is shown, and John talked about Jim Trafficant as well, as far as that's concerned. And then it says, public education does not teach principles of lawful government. Again, Charlotte Isserby has been a leading voice in that discussion, especially the nuances, problems with charter schools and things like that. The mass media cartel prevents distribution of truth and principle. And again, just as a brief aside, Alison Weir has done a good job of reminding us that Dorothy Thompson was the second most influential, considered the second most influential and recognized by Time magazine in 1939 as the second most influential woman in America next to Eleanor Roosevelt. And then by 1945, after a trip to Palestine, because she was a Zionist mouthpiece for a while, and suddenly after a trip to Palestine, she turns her views completely around, and she was warned that in the American press world, that was almost a definition of professional suicide. But she eventually concluded that Zionism was a recipe for perpetual war. And so why haven't you ever heard of Dorothy Thompson? Well, that's why, because she was, as Alison Weir points out, she was entirely, basically unpersoned in Orwellian fashion, erased from history, almost. And there are numerous examples. Alison Weir is a great source on that. Anyway, from the description about John's talk last Saturday, people with the knowledge are dying and not being replaced. An educated population is necessary, but we are a nation divided on almost every issue, easily controlled by tyrants, should probably say, and easily controlled by tyrants. And again, that gets back to the foundational premise that I mentioned at the outset. To the phones we go. Jeff in Georgia, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yes, can you hear me clearly?
Yep.
Yes, you know, the level of deception of these puppet masters has led me to the point that I trust nothing. And, you know, for example, just an example, you mentioned Spartacus education. I don't know if you know, the host of that's John Simpkins, and I believe he's Jewish. And he has controlled opposition. I've been on that site because I study the JFK assassination frequently, and he moderates a site there. He won't let me on it, of course, because I know who was central to the assassination. It was a Jewish cartel. They were behind every element that participated in that assassination. And then their media covered it up. But Simpkins is controlled opposition. They'll discuss every aspect of anything as long as they stay away from their role. And they have more money now, Chris, than they ever have. And it's pouring in like it never has. It's pouring in this country. We're paying hundreds of billions of dollars as interest on a 20 plus trillion dollar debt. Europe's paying hundreds of billions of dollars on trillions of dollars of debt in their countries collectively. There's no way, you know, I told you this last time, you disagree with me. They are far, far smarter than us. Their level of deception is so hard to detect. It's even harder, like if you ever watched Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Predator. And there's one part where they see the predator, you know, where the guy does just before he dies. And they're more deceptive than even that. You know, I got into a email conversation with a guy named Jefferson Morley, who just wrote a book called The Ghost. The Ghost is a very good book on James Jesus Angleton. Angleton was central. He was essentially a de facto Mossad agent. He loved Israel to death. He participated. He did all the cover for and the control of Oswald. He was consulting with the Mossad. He was the only guy. He was a liaison to the Mossad. He had a guy named Delurian who was actually a Mossad-controlled agent, had a French connection the day that Kennedy was assassinated. But Morley, so I go out and I start studying Morley because I said, you know, I wrote him and I said, Angleton was one of the greatest traitors in the history of this country.
Well, you know, if you're gonna say that, there have been so many that have, you know, been celebrated at the CIA. I mean, the CIA's their wall should be the wall of traitors, the wall of infamy, because I mean, Angleton certainly ranks in the highest order, as you pointed out, but he's not alone.
James Angleton. Okay, I'm older than you. The assassination of Kennedy and the mistrust in government that's created is leading our country into collapse. That event. But Angleton was behind the USS Liberty. He actually had a hand in putting the USS Liberty out off the shores of Egypt. Mossad agents met with him. That's in Morley's book. He knew that Israel was stealing nuclear processed uranium. He said nothing. And he even had a hand, and it's unclear to me, but he had a hand in the Nixon soft coup because he knew those players. He knew Howard Hunt, who was part of that, that they set Nixon up and he fell for it. But Angleton was evil. There's nothing like him in as far as a traitor for America. Israel loves him. He saved their country, but he destroyed our country. But Morley, you know, he might be Jewish, he might be a Catholic, he might be a WASP. I have no idea. But he's control opposition. If you look at his background, he'll go up to the door, but he will not enter that door and say, "Hey, Israel was behind it." He won't say that. He'll get on YouTube, and you can see him. You know, I saw him the other day with a guy named Andrew Craig. And Andrew Craig is a very deceptive Jew, very intelligent, much more than I am. But now the Jewish powers have to exonerate the press because they did not publish the dissent. There was many people that said, "Hey, I seen something else on Dealey Plaza." They hushed all that up. And so now I saw him with Morley in some forum, you know, a bunch of big shots, you know, a room full of people, and he said that, well, the CIA created Operation Mockingbird, but it only went up to either the CEO of these of ABC, NBC, CBS, or one level below that. And they were forced to cover up for the CIA. They weren't forced to do nothing. The Jewish powers and the banking cartel work hand in hand, along with the publishing houses. Their apparatus is the greatest thing. It's greater than the Roman Empire, the British Empire, the American Empire combined. We cannot overthrow that until we cancel the debt, until we have reparations, until we put the power back in the people. I'm for revolution. It's nonviolent, but I'm
I know
now
you say it every time
revolution.
You call.
Yes, I do, and I'll tell you where else I tout it. I tout it everywhere that I go.
All right, so, you know, as far as the debt is concerned, we've talked about that. The presses need to be stopped. And, you know, that whole issue of, you know, the debt, yeah, obviously that's problematic. But reparations is tricky. History proves that, you know, that can be a real flashpoint. And I, you know, I don't want that. That might be a separate issue. As far as intelligence and intellect is concerned,
yes.
Listen, Jeff, I listen to you. Now you listen to me, okay? Let's be respectful. So as far as intelligence is concerned and intellect, I think that there is a distinction that should be made, however nuanced, between cunning and intelligence. And, you know, I think of Jesus saying that basically the devil is a cunning and crafty foe. And I think of the folks that we're talking about generally as cunning. You know, Webster's 1828, knowing, skillful, experienced, well-instructed, you know, street smart, basically, in a way that the average person is not. Nesta Webster, the way that she put it in World Revolution, The Plot Against Civilization, she wrote, "It is difficult to write of these things calmly, for to deceive the people whose simple faith and lack of education." But what is it? They're not cunning. They're not street smart, basically. I think that's what she meant in terms of lack of education. "Prevent them seeing whether they're being led is as cowardly as to guide a blind man into a ditch." And so I think of these scenarios that you're talking about, at high levels, it's hard to I think it's difficult to make a case that people don't know what they're doing. You know, you have guys like Edward Bernays in Propaganda and C. Wright Mills in The Power Elite, writing that, you know, these guys, these interlocking councils and directorates and committees and stuff, all of the things that get talked about on this network, they're, you know, like Bernays said, this is the true ruling power of our country, the invisible government, but they don't really know who each other are. And you and I would agree probably on the fact that it's difficult to make a case that at some level the players don't know who's who. But then at a certain level, and I don't know where it is, there is the compartmentalization, the plausible deniability. Speaking of James Jesus Angleton, the wilderness of mirrors, which kind of, I think, gets back to what I was saying at the outset of today's broadcast, and, you know, which echoes what John was saying on Saturday to some degree. So what is useful and expedient for all of us? What can we do? And that might be a different thing for each one of us, but I just have a sense that, you know, there should be some positive course of action for all of us. And it might not be the same for all of us, but we should be able to extrapolate something positive out of this, some positive course of action, right? For example, what do you mean when you say revolution? And when I ask that question, I think of John Adams' letter to Hezekiah Niles back in February of 1818. So what do you mean?
I mean reform that is so great that you cannot call it anything but a revolution. It would be politically unheard of since the beginning of the country, since the revolution. It'd be a second revolution. It's nonviolent. It is the overthrow of banking and the implementation of many things beyond that. Full employment for all able-bodied people. And the end of welfare as we know it. Okay, give young people a stake in our society. Instead of having foreigners building our roads and bridges, have our youth. They have a stake in this country. They're American citizens. The end of dual citizenship. You know, the end of fractional banking. The government would control the quantity of money. And government always has to have a fire under it. It would be many other things. It would be progressive. That's another term they've stolen from us. They've stolen the term progressive. You know, we once lived in caves, and now we lived in houses. We once didn't have toilets. Now we do. That's progressive. Humans are going forward. But the banking cartel is retarding our progressive development. We have to overthrow them. We have to overthrow them, and we have to have a revolution. It's nonviolent. It starts with somebody stepping out saying we're canceling the debt. They'll educate the people. The people will understand very quickly it was fraudulently loaned to governments with money that the super banks didn't have. We have to have the end of the 500-plus billionaires in this country. They have proven over and over again that they rule the country by oligarchy. They rule Europe by oligarchy. That has to end. And I'm not talking socialism, capitalism. I'm throwing out all them terms. They were invented by somebody. You know, you have to incentivize people, but you got to give them a stake in something. Okay, free speech, for example. The puppet masters, this banking cartel, they're trying to shut me down. That's my human right. That's your human right, whether we're right or wrong. That is a right we should be spreading everywhere. They're shutting that down, and they will shut it down. I'm calling for revolution now because I see what's coming. They will create a fractionalized nation that will have pit race and ethnic against ethnic. They're doing that. We can stop that.
Well, that's,
we can nurture
that's,
those relations.
You're saying a lot. It's difficult to identify a focal point, you know, when you're talking about revolution. You said a mouthful. You said quite a mouthful over the last, wow, 20 or so minutes. Anyway, we're headed into a break. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend
your life with Extendovice.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's National Intel Report this Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. We're on the phones. We have Jeff in Georgia. Jeff, let me respond a little bit on my perspective. First, progress. I'm always reminded when the subject of progressives and the subject of progress arises of Santayana's admonition, and we have the little kind of paraphrased excerpt from The Life of Reason, Volume 1, but it's paraphrased down to logical fallacy. The context is removed. So he wrote, progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve and no direction is set for possible improvement. And when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. In other words, we never grow out of infancy. And you can see that in American society in the faces of folks. You look back 50 years and you can look in the yearbooks and see 17, 18, 19-year-old kids look like 30-year-old adults. Today, everyone looks like a Nubian child, basically. So he said, based on that fact, progress far from consisting in change depends on retentiveness. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Similarly, Edmund Burke observed in Reflections on the Revolution in France that people will not look forward to posterity who never look back to their ancestors. And as far as revolution is concerned, I'm always reminded of, again, John Adams' letter to Hezekiah Niles back in February of 1818, but also the Second American Revolution as Thomas McNeice intimated it back during the Rees Committee hearings. In his report titled The Economics of the Public Interest, he wrote that these original studies, and again, this is the Rees Committee back in the 50s, 52 to 54, he wrote, these original studies of the public interest disclose that during the 4 years, 1933 to 36, a change took place which was so drastic as to constitute a revolution. This was a report to a congressional committee. It was not hyperbole. They also indicated conclusively that the responsibility for the economic welfare of the American people had been transferred heavily to the executive branch of the federal government. That was actually the administrative branch, but details. That a corresponding change in education, here's the key, had taken place from an impetus outside the local community, and that this revolution had occurred without violence and with the full consent of an overwhelming majority of the electorate. In seeking to explain this unprecedented phenomenon, subsequent studies pursued by the staff clearly showed it could not have occurred peacefully or with the consent of the majority unless education was prepared in advance to endorse it. And so from there, my mind skips forward to, the quote that's allegedly attributed to Washington, government is like a fire, a dangerous servant, a fearful master. Did Washington really say that? Well, John Tillotson did say something. The Archbishop of Canterbury said something very similar. I'll mention that at the top of the second hour, and we'll continue on. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. Second hour coming up right after this short break.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.